welcome to Here Beside the Rising Tide, your 2021 reading for Cancer, Sun, Moon, and Rising. Eric here with you in this decidedly strange moment. I am recording this the night before Mercury stations direct in your 12th house. Whether we're using whole sign houses or regular houses or solar houses, whatever, what happens in Gemini is in the blind spot of what happens in Cancer. And though there is usually a surge of relief when the sun leaves the 12th and enters the 1st, under whatever circumstances that may be, we're in this peculiar moment with Mercury stationing direct in your 12th house. So it's hard to put into words how strange that can be, except maybe you're feeling it. Maybe you're noticing it as this sense of tremendous uncertainty, a direct sense of not knowing something. And, you know, maybe by the time you get this, Mercury probably will have stationed direct, and you may find something out. The thing is that you'll be finding things out in the few weeks after Mercury has stationed direct. I think all through the second shadow period, or echo period, depending on how you look at it, as Mercury recrosses the degrees where it was retrograde. And as it does that, it's going to make a third square to Neptune. So that's the thing that has made this all so really weird. And then the past month or two, and then on top of that, there have been all of these other effects going on, which include a lunar eclipse in the 12th house. Solar eclipse in your 12th house. So that 12th has been very active between the Mercury station direct, the whole Mercury retrograde taking place there, and then the solar eclipse. A lot of stuff that just feels like, you know, you're used to riding the, let's say, riding the tide and going with the flow, being born under the sign Cancer. Anything involved with the sign Cancer will cycle, but this is quite a bit, and it has, the 12th has the feeling of not being able to control what's going on. So the best thing you can do is just keep maintaining awareness and keep maintaining your vigilance and, you know, work with the information that you have, making as few assumptions as possible. There are other things that have made, just in the immediate term, these few weeks, month and a half leading into your birthday, an unusual time, and may not have you feeling as steady on your pins as you might ordinarily be. And those include this massively important square aspect between Saturn in the 8th and Uranus in the 11th, both houses involving finance. And so there's some likely to be some uncertainty there. And then what else happened? Those are the major things. The eclipses in Sagittarius and Gemini, and the square between Uranus and Saturn really responsible for a lot of tension. It just feels like there's this tension that won't let go, and it's difficult to catch up with yourself. And of course, since the year that has gone by when I last did this type of reading for you, so much has changed in the world, and I think that there has been so much human-constructed crisis. I mean, people are really working hard to make it seem like everything that happened since February, March of 2020 was just one big unfortunate accident, and that all the people responsible were doing their very best and all that stuff. But as time goes on, and I think as time continues, it will be more obvious what happened and how it is that the delicate situation that we are now in was the result of human activity. And it's going to take human activity and ingenuity to get us out of it. Though I think that this long visit of Mercury to your 12th house is saying that there has to be something beyond just the world of mental power and the power of money and the power of determination, because so many of the factors that have influenced us just seem to have that 12th house feeling of being out of control and not knowing what is really going on. And I think in summary of this introduction, I would say that the single most important thing you cannot do is fill in the blanks with information that may not be true. Years ago, my therapist, who became my therapy teacher and generally a life teacher, Joe Truso, talked about the passages in the work of Carlos Castaneda, supposedly about this shaman that some people say doesn't exist, by the name of Don Juan Mattis. And whether this particular entity by that name existed is irrelevant to the ideas that were offered. And one of the teachings of Don Juan is a warning about the enemies of man, as he calls them back in that 1960s type of language, where you could say things, didn't say enemies of humanity or such, you'd say enemies of man. And one of them is clarity. So this turned out to be a lot simpler idea than I thought at the time. Like, well, that's an interesting way to say it. But what he meant was false clarity, not knowing when you don't know. I mean, how many times have you heard me say, know when you don't know? If you know when you don't know, you're a genius. If you don't know when you don't know, you've got a problem. And so the Mercury stationing direct in the 12th in your solar return chart, any major event that occurs during the month that the sun is in the sign Cancer is in the solar return picture for your sign, and the year ahead astrology for your rising sign and moon is at least it's easy to know when you don't know, to make a list of the unknown unknowns and some of the known unknowns, and not rush in with false conclusiveness. So this is a mental posture, and what we see people doing a lot of in this particular space and time of the human experience under full digital conditions that we are under now, and increasing fast, right? There's going to be ever more new kinds of digital conditions, because these advocates of technology and people who tend to create warlike environments where they can assert and brush their technology in are going to create even more of this strangeness and more of this uncertainty. And part of what that environment, that mental environment does, is it leads a lot of people to, more so than normal, grab onto something and stick with it. Pick something that sounds good and stick with it. Choose an opinion, regardless of facts, and latch on. And basically stay permanently grafted to that and then be impervious to any developments. And so part of the clarity warning is to maintain a flexible and circumspect position in everything that you do. And this is a daily discipline. There's no getting around the fully conscious acts required to know when you don't know and to keep a circumspect position. A circumspect position means to look around the room. One of the best examples of circumspect I can give you is when I'm covering some kind of an event. If I'm a reporter, I'm in the room at an event, a government event of some kind, or anything really. I walk around the room and look at the room from all the different viewpoints. I get, if I can get behind the action and look at the audience, and then try as many different points of view in the audience as I can. That's partly the result of being a somewhat restless person who does not like to sit still for hours. But then I saw the wisdom in looking at things from as many viewpoints as possible. And so many times I've written in my horoscope, go, you know, find a high building in your town and look down at the life that you're living. Look at your apartment from across the street. Change your viewpoint. This is just one of many ways to be able to gradually ascertain the truth. With Mercury stationing direct in Gemini in the 12th, right? That alone is essentially an impossible situation for any clarity or certainty. And then add the square 90-degree aspect to Neptune. That is calling for a slow approach to gaining understanding and to gaining knowledge, and always resisting thinking that you know. And I know this can make it seem like worse than things actually are, but actually it's not. It's more staying in tune with your environment to be able to hold off making firm observations or conclusions, and to hold off taking irreversible actions, particularly under the current circumstances. And I say this knowing that the current circumstances have led many people into some extreme states of frustration, and having had to, you know, been forced to make decisions that they didn't want to make of many, many different kinds, and dealing with extraordinarily challenging situations with our children, and positively ridiculous circumstances involving families, the pressure that families are putting on people, the pressure that individuals in families are putting on people, and this whole realm of obsession with social control. So let's back up one house. I talked a little bit about the 12th, and I didn't really have a firm plan going into the reading, given that I am born with Cancer rising and Mercury stationing direct in my 12th house. I think following my own astrology here, a circumspect approach will take. But let's go back one house. Speaking of the pressures applied by society, you are not having it. Now, you may have succumbed to certain things, or there has just been this pressure that would give anybody the bends put on people to do all these things, to conform. And normally you're a little more forgiving about this, but you have because you're Taurus in the 11th, which is about the influence of groups on you and the influence of you on groups and your interaction with the, let's say, the everyday society of going out or being involved in organizations of any kind or taking part in internet-related activities. Well, since 2018, you have had Uranus in your 11th house, Taurus, and this is strongly encouraging of a kind of rebelliousness, a kind of individuality that is not harmonized with brooking social pressure. And so to the extent that you determine, that you look back honestly at the past year and determine what exactly it was that you were led to do based on social pressure, first of all, you might want to just, follow your original impulse to not be part of that game, to not be willing to just comply. And then you may find that you need to repair some things that you did comply with and backtrack to the extent that you can. And I do recognize that there are likely to be some very difficult things to backtrack on. But remember that I said that, and look for the opportunities to do so. Pay careful attention to what you regret doing based on having been pressured to do so. And I would say take this occasion, this renewal of your, let's say, astrological cycle as a time to hold your position, to push back as hard as you need to push back on. There's so much, lack of resolve in our culture right now. And then at the same time, there is so much, the word in the truest sense is codependency, of not, you know, not wanting to make people uncomfortable, not wanting to have it seem like you're too different, not wanting to shake up the apple cart. And right now, the most important thing that anyone needs that will help you is courage to feel from your heart and to live your values. And the resistance to the dominant movement of the culture that's described by having this revolutionary element, Uranus, placed in your 11th house, is working on several different levels. It's not merely that you're not necessarily at all that you're being rebellious, but that accusation is often leveled. Oh, you're just trying to be different. Well, it's no. Maybe you have your own life to live, and this is a kind of a karmic test, a dharmic and a karmic test. Like, it is really about standing the ground of who you actually are, not rebelling for its own sake, not wanting to have an influence on other people for its own sake, not thinking that what you feel, believe, and understand to be correct for yourself is correct for anyone else. This is just about you doing what is right for you. And there is the overt level of that. There's the level represented by Uranus. There's the level represented by what can be seen and called something, called rebellious, called individualistic and all that. And then there's a much deeper level of you needing with every cell in your body for your soul's development to be true to your soul. And to understand that, as we'll get into in a moment when we move into the 10th house, working our way backwards around the wheel, is that you have a profound influence on people, and often that influence is not conveyed by words or by direct teaching as much as it is is conveyed by your actions. And also by your vibe, by how you comport yourself in the world. And many people are looking to you as a source of strength and as a source of an example and as a point of orientation. A metaphor from Burning Man comes to mind. I don't know if you've ever been there, but The whole ritual is centered around this kind of very friendly looking sculpture, usually made of like plywood or something, the representation of a man, elevated up about 40, 50 feet, and the playa, the scene, the city, Black Rock City, and then the whole playa in the middle and all that can become extraordinarily chaotic, depending on when, you know, what time of day it is and, you know, how far from home you are. It's very easy to get lost. And yet in the middle of it all is this figure lighting up the night sky and visible during the day. And you can always orient. You can always look for that thing and, like, find your way back to it and or like go there and then find your way home from there. And that is what you are to many people right now. You are this visible, prominent point of orientation for other people. And while I don't intend to put more responsibility on you than you can handle or more than you want, that's just simply how I see what you are. That's just what it looks like from your astrology. And this is partly about having Uranus so prominent in your 11th house, and partly the sublime influence of Albion, what we used to be called 1992 QB1, which is the influence you have on others, helping them make decisions by your example, helping them accept themselves by your example. And sometimes this becomes a conversation where you are called upon to help people make decisions, and you're called upon as someone who assists people in their self-acceptance process, which keeps you focused on yours. But when we back up to Aries, your 10th house, continuing our reverse trek around the wheel, you have Chiron as one of the most elevated influences in your chart. So in this method that I'm using, in this chart that I have, which I'll photograph and include, it may take me a couple of extra hours to get it up after the audio. Chiron is in your 10th house. It's been there also since 2018. And though there are other influences in your 10th, the most stand out of them is Chiron. And part of this is about how it is Chiron's role. It is one of the things that Chiron does most significantly and has been documented all through the history of the recording of Chiron experiences and descriptions of charts since this began in the late 1970s and early 1980s, is that Chiron is the maverick. Chiron tends to stand alone. Chiron tends to stand out. And I understand from listening to countless thousands of people tell me their life experiences, and particularly now, how uncomfortable this is for many people to stand out, to be noticed, to be seen, to not just disappear and blend into the woodwork and be able to hide. But having Chiron in the 10th house in Aries, there's no getting around the fact that you are visible, you are seen, and you are also seen as an exemplar. And one of the things you're seen as an exemplar for is, said another way, Chiron in Aries is the example of self-acceptance that you set for the people in your life and for the people who encounter you, who may not even stop and talk to you. They may not know your name. And this can work on the subtle planes as well. You know, the influence that we have, particularly people who are on a growth path of some kind and who are committed to their service, who are committed aspirants, initiates, and other, let's say, people who are consciously living on a spiritual journey, is the influence can go well beyond the physical plane, and you may be working with people in other places and other times. And so it's important that you recognize that your influence is expressed through the world that you're aware of, through the world where you actually can see and witness and encounter things going on. And then it is possible and highly likely that you're having an effect on the subtle planes as well. And imagine that you are a point of orientation, and so when that is true, you need your own point of orientation, and you know you need to know when you're lost and when you're found, handling those concepts with genuine gentleness, remembering the sheer number of variables involved, and yet that inner sense of direction, that inner sense of calling, is something that you have and are capable of at all times. So in this section, I would like to address the axis of the first house, you, and the seventh house, your partnerships. By the way, I include as little astrology as possible in these. I know there's a part of the audience glazes over at the mention of any astrology, and my intent is not to razzle and dazzle people with the technicalities. Far to the contrary. I use enough astrology only to make the point or when it is the best metaphor. Sometimes Burning Man is the best metaphor, and sometimes astrology is the best metaphor. And in astrology, one of the kind of time-honored ways to work that almost all astrologers, one of the few things that all astrologers would agree on, is that the first house generally, particularly in some kind of a chart reading, represents the individual being read for, and the seventh house represents their relationships. And I expand the definition of the seventh to include relationships, which include friendly and hostile relationships, by the way, to also include a general picture of the environment. So every house in astrology represents an environment. That's what they are. They are places. They are things describable. But the seventh is how you experience the world from day to day. It's what you look at when you look out at the world, and how you feel when the world looks back at you. And one of the reasons why this is such a critical zone in your chart, requiring special handling, it has been for a while, though it is becoming more so, is because there has been such absolutely extraordinary astrology taking place in the sign Capricorn. So, for example, in January of 2020, there was the conjunction of Saturn and Pluto in Capricorn, something that very rarely happens. Some kind of a 40-ish year cycle, and then you know, previous time it occurred in Libra, then occurred in Capricorn. So it doesn't occur in the same sign, of course, every time, and happened to happen in one of the most sensitive zones in your chart. And it's I wrote about this extensively in a reading that can be added to this reading, a 20-page written reading, one of my astrological masterpieces, of why exactly it is that the sign Cancer was one of the most directly impacted by the events of 2020, and that is because that you were looking right at them, and directly in the line of whatever moving objects or whatever was coming at everyone was coming at you directly. Because it's just straightforward. It's like right there. You're looking right at it all the time. And so you were an unusually powerful eyewitness. And also, in many ways, bore the brunt of the events. And you know, maybe it seems unfair to say this in a world where everyone kind of bore the brunt of the events, but I assure you the effects were not evenly distributed. They never are. The effects of any collective event are never equally distributed. And you, in particular, had a lot of opportunity to, let's say, rise to the occasion. And this, due to the way that all the houses interrelate, spread out and had many different impacts and influences and reached far and wide in your life, in particularly influencing your professional life, but also your most personal relationships. And yet it is much more accurate to say that you noticed more than anyone the shift in the world in which we live, whether you liked it or hated it or went along with it or resisted it or didn't know what to do or handled it brilliantly or handled it terribly. You noticed the extent of the changes, in particular the changes of the structure of society, because that's what we're looking at. As someone born under the sign Cancer, you want things to be stable. One of the stories of the sign Cancer is that it's the sign that rules the moon. And so when you've got the sign Cancer, you tap into the cycle of the moon. That's very cyclical. The moon is the basically fastest moving object that's used by astrologers, and you understand that you are a cyclical being, that you are not any kind of a static force, right? And everybody is a cyclical being, but some people get to have the illusion or even the reality for a while longer of being more stable. For example, signs like Taurus and Capricorn generally are more stable, even Virgo and others. So Cancer has this tidal flow effect going on where there's this pull, this movement at all times, and everything seems to be shifting. And so one of the things you do to compensate for that is that you engage with the world in such a way that is designed to build stability, that is designed to give you a framework within which to operate. And by the way, this is very important for all the water signs, but particularly for Cancer and for Pisces, because they're not fixed signs. You're a cardinal sign. Pisces is a mutable sign. And so the need to have moorings, the need to have a dock to attach the ship to, the need to be able to have an anchor you can drop. And remember, the anchor like lands on the bottom of the water, right? The anchor lands on the land. It's the connection between the land and the water. You need all of those things. And for many years, there has been radical shifting and changing in the Capricorn environment. There were three, depending on how old you are, three huge bouts of this that are worth remembering. One was in 1993 and thereabouts, with the conjunction of Uranus and Neptune in Capricorn. And that spread out in a few years in either direction, but it was one of the outstanding outer planet events of the 20th century, and in many ways shaped all of society. We're still living with the effects of this development all the way back in 1993, almost 30 years ago. Then Chiron passed through Capricorn in between late 2001 and I believe early 2005. So it was the, let's say, the immediately post 9/11 era. And this also was a profound rearrangement of the world that we live in. And so that was 20 years ago, incredibly, began 20 years ago. That it seems like it was 5 minutes ago. Then the next big wave begins in 2008 when Pluto enters Capricorn. And so Pluto is this very slow-moving influence. It's sometimes difficult to discern, but if you think back on what happened in 2008, 9, and 10 for you, and the kinds of shifts that you went through, again, depending on your age, but we're going back 30 years here, this all comes to a head in early 2020. So with Capricorn, we're looking at, first of all, the sign that's supposed to be the stable thing, the Rock of Gibraltar, the you know, Columbia University, you know, the New York Public Library, you know, the things that are just always supposed to be there, that are supposed to be stable and solid and dependable, the blue chip stocks, as they used to be called. And suddenly, in essentially in the digital age, wave after wave of change. And then the big one, really, the big one was Saturn conjunct Pluto on 1/12/20. And you were looking right at it. And, you know, many people took it in stride. It is unlikely that you, if you did take it in stride and you kept going and you kept your stride, it is likely that you had to constantly rise to the occasion. And Pluto remains in your seventh house. That is a developing story, but there's some more recent activity that is worth noting. And you know, here as I'm writing, you know, speaking to you with the sun really just probably just passed out of the first degree of Cancer, in the first degree of Capricorn is an influence called Ixion. And this is basically saying you just have to be careful with everybody that you're dealing with, and that the thing that you must be the most sensitive to is when people lack a moral and ethical framework. You've got to really be listening and asking yourself, with every person you allow into your life, every person you encounter, every potential person who might enter your life, what is this person's ethical framework? Now, this will lead you to ask about, you know, your ethical framework, and you are very likely to be someone who cares. And, you know, you've got Chiron, one of the lords of ethics, being one of the most prominent planets in your chart right now. But you can't project your good intentions and your, let's say, healthy, guilty conscience onto other people. You need to be studying how it is they relate to right and wrong. That is ultimately the ethical framework. What it is to them that they perceive as being moral or as immoral. And where to be the most concerned is when that seems to be missing entirely. That's the true nature of Ixion. It's not so much immoral. Immoral, that's easy to spot. Right, immoral is people, obviously, you know, they do the wrong thing and you can catch them quickly. When someone is amoral, when someone has no framework whatsoever, that is it creates a metaphysical effect where they can fool people because it doesn't really seem like they're violating any moral code. It's just not there. It's missing. The framework is missing. So be sensitive to this and constantly ask yourself, what does this person I'm talking to think the difference between right and wrong is, and do they have a difference? And note and act on the information that you get. Now, there are two more major factors that have been active for a while, and I've written about them in various times and places. Probably fairly easy to find. If you're curious, just poke around and I can help you if you need to. Pholus conjunct Quasar in Capricorn. So these are not asteroids. None of these things I'm talking about are asteroids. I don't think I'm mentioning a single asteroid in tonight's reading. They are one is a trans-Neptunian point orbit beyond the point of orbit of Pluto, and one's a centaur similar to Chiron. They're both long period. I think Pholus is about 70 years or so, and Quasar is close to 300 years. So these things take a long time to move through a sign, and you are looking right at them. Now, fortunately, their theme is fairly easy to describe because it's always going to involve family and tribe. And so with everyone you meet, remember, the seventh is the house where everyone comes into your life, or potentially anyone can come into your life. And to some extent, any meeting that you have in any other house is going to have some way that it's conditioned by the seventh house. If the relationship in any way develops, it will always be readable, at least in part, as a seventh house influence. And the thing to be looking at here is, what is the tribal and family angle on this relationship? And so you get things that might seem like group therapy, where in any therapy group, the whole group kind of shakes out as your family, right? The people take on the role of your mother and your sister and your aunt and your uncle and your whatever, grandfather, whoever it might be. And so you want to be asking yourself, what role are these people playing? What is the assignment that they have? Who do they remind you of? It really is that simple. Who do they remind you of? This is easy to spot if you are listening to who they remind you of. And remember that you are, you're looking for their moral framework. Does it exist? Question one. And what is it? Question two. And then, who do they remind you of? How far back does this relationship feel like it goes? So this is a setup for relationships that not only remind you of very old-timey, ancient stuff, but that can actually go back quite far. And there may be, on some level, a gathering of the tribes going on in your life, or the gathering of your tribe going on in your life. The interesting thing about having Pholus and Quaoar in a conjunction, I mean, it's just endlessly interesting to contemplate this, is that they both represent family matters. But Pholus goes back four generations, me plus three, so your great-grandparents, and Quaoar goes back all the way to the origin of and the creation of the tribe, the beginning of it all. And so these are different brainwaves, and as you click through the filters, like at the eye doctor, where you just click through, when does it look good? Well, this question is, what does it look like? Click the frame, click the little wheel. What does it look like now? Now it looks like a giraffe. Oh, now it looks like my Uncle Louie. Oh, now it looks like my Aunt Mabel. Oh, now it looks like my cousin Billy, who jumped off a building when he was 9 years old, whatever. You're going to see this stuff go by. You're going to see these people. And they will have different roles. And so one of the things to be sensitive to, in addition to who people remind you of, is what is the role that this person has in your life? Do they help you? Do they harm you? Do they take your time? Do they save you time? Are they friendly? Are they hostile? Do things go better when they're around, or do things go worse when they're around? So you have to, in a sense, scry off of your environment, like divine off of it, and notice the patterns and notice the roles that people have. And this is as intimate as it gets, because as people enter your life, they are going to announce who they are or typecast themselves in a certain way, and you may project a role onto them as well. And it'll be very helpful to know, to be aware of when you are doing that, when you are projecting a role onto people. So just listen to yourself. Now, if we notice them and listen to yourself. Now, if we fold this back to the first house, very interesting stuff going on there. First of all, in the immediate sense, as of the time of this reading, let's get a chart up more exact. We've got some numbers on these planets. At this very moment, Venus is in late Cancer, late in your sign. So that's usually nice. That's usually a positive, beneficial thing. The thing is, now Venus is right now it's exactly trine Neptune. Hold that thought. What is I think more outstanding is that it is square Eris and opposite Pluto. And so this represents something that you've got to weather, something you've got to get through, and something you have to not allow to strictly define you and to define your worldview. But you are sensitive and you're vulnerable to the influences of other people. And It is not not necessarily easy to be in this position. There may be some situation in your life where you may feel like you're in the crosshairs, or like you are under some unusual pressure. That might mean pressure to change. It might mean pressure to submit. There's, again, we, you know, began with this, where there's just a huge amount of pressure being put on people from all different angles, very often to make decisions that are not true to their values. And one of the easiest ways to do this is to pretend it's not happening and to go along with it. That, however, does not change the underlying reality. So you've got Venus at this moment square Eris in your 10th, and this may be a rather chaotic and high pressure situation involving your responsibilities and your work, where it just seems like you cannot fucking get a grip. The chances are, though, that you have a better grip than you imagine, and so don't imagine that you don't. You know, don't count yourself out. Don't imagine you're doing things badly. You may be doing quite well under the circumstances, whereas there are a lot of other possibilities for how things could be going on. And then Venus is going to be looking at Pluto in the seventh house, and so this evolves over the next few months. You need to, I think, be very mindful of matters around investment and loss, and set limits on what you are willing to give of yourself. And that does not mean, like, make a rule, be stingy at all times. I'm just saying you need to know when enough is enough. And then also there is a powerful force that is going to call for your direct acknowledgement and a kind of a confrontation. And there is nothing especially to indicate that if you handle yourself, you're not going to handle this quite well. To not be overly threatened, even though there is a sense of a confrontation, of looking at something that looks like an inevitability, okay, that's there, but it's like, all right, what choices do you have in this? Where exactly is your flexibility? And one thing I can tell you is that you first of all are supported, but second, the thing you want to do, in my opinion, all my opinion here, is work with the thing that shifts you out of the cycle, and not jack the stakes up until you have to make a total, radical, complete transformation, but rather what adjustments you can make and how you can use the influences in your environment as things that you can grab a hold of and be able to, first of all, not get stuck in a kind of a whirlpool, not get stuck in a kind of a cycle that you can't get out of, but also to use them in a constructive way, to use the influences that are forcing you to change in ways that you want to change, that have needed to change for a long time. So this is a wide open possibility, and we are all confronted with these influences that shift and change the trajectory of our lives. They often come in through relationships, whatever it is, something you're likely to be able to look right at, but use it to your maximum advantage, and remember that one of the most helpful things that you can do all through the next four seasons is to stay out of or shift situations that just seem to be have this feeling of the Bermuda Triangle, like a whirlpool that just kind of draws everything into it. And to be extraordinarily mindful with your resources, all of your resources, not just your money, with all of your resources, everything that the money buys, everything that the money cannot buy, and to make choices that are based on your values with your resources rather than the values of other people. And that may be the essence, the very essence of the challenge. In the reading for Aquarian Era for Cancer, which, by the way, is the reference reading, I thought that the events in the sign Cancer were the ones that were the most exemplary for everyone, and so I put a lot of material in there that applies to all 12 signs, but particularly what applies to the sign Cancer is the prominence of Aquarius for the next approximately, what year is it? I guess 23 years, so out till 2044. We're in what I'm calling the Aquarian Era. I'm the only astrologer using that name unless somebody else has picked up on it. And what I mean by that is the phase of time during which Jupiter and Saturn and then Pluto, starting in 23, are going to be in Aquarius. This is as apart from the Aquarian Age, which is a 2,000-year or so thing that no one really knows when it starts, so I write quite a bit about the Aquarian Age and its implications and how the Aquarian Era relates to it. And one of the most important factors is the rapid evolution and acceleration of technology and how it is taking over every facet of our lives, our relationships, and also, most lately, our physical bodies are being merged with digital technology. Now, I know there are people who will say no, and they have a different definition of being merged with digital technology, and I am taking a rational, explainable, comprehensible, and documented approach to my views on this subject, though it is undeniable that we have been in this time, I think, that goes back to around the era of Match.com in the 1990s, when essentially every facet of our relationships is being conducted by computer. Now, the Match.com era is the, let's politely call it the find a date online and have phone sex era. Now, not everyone was doing that, but it was the, from there, it was an extremely rapid transition into essentially almost all facets of relationship being in silico. By that, I mean existing in the realm of computers. The term in silico also means theoretical, and there is a theoretical quality to long-distance relationships. Since we are physical beings who respond to one another's physical presence and generally seek physical presence with one another, I think that this is something we need to monitor very carefully and adjust within ourselves and make sure that we're living the values that we need to live. It's easy to understand it if you think about it in terms of dogs and cats. So lots of us love dogs and cats. No one would think that having a video relationship with a canine or feline would be even meekly satisfying. You want to curl up on the couch and, get in your puppy's face and nip each other playing. And, if you have a kitten, you want to pick up a couple of scratches on your hand because it's fun. And, make dinner for them and go out walking and things like that. And humans seem to be forgetting that it is this physical presence in relationships that is the thing that we need. And I say this because house eight, the eighth place in astrology, is one of the most important houses in astrology because it is the zone where many people and things enter our relationships. And it is the kind of filter that sets the tone and the feeling. And you have Aquarius here in the eighth place. And Aquarius is a sign associated with electricity and the development of technology. And so, you know, you want to be monitoring this carefully and make sure that you're getting the physical contact and the physical presence that you need and not falling for this newfangled concept of what it means to relate to people, which in the end, when we talk about in silico relationships, boils down to relationships that are very chilly on the intimacy and on the vulnerability. And I would note that for many, this is the thing that makes them the most appealing, is that they do not have those qualities to them. And for those of us who are older, there is that is just a prospect as chilly as the results. Additionally, the eighth house is the house associated with accounts, with the accounts of financial transactions and relationships between people. And given that, it is a place where there needs to be, I think, a lot of conscious reconciliation of all of your financial affairs. Now, the way that the eighth house gets this distinction is through very early translations of what it means, but it starts to enter the English language through a writer named William Lilly, and I don't know what his source was of this delineation, but it is certainly a valid delineation of the eighth, and he calls his chapter in his 1647 textbook, the first ever in English again, death, dowry, and the substance of the bride, etc. So when we think of these things, it's about estates, it's about legacy, it's about inheritance, wills, and trusts, and then it's about the transfer of wealth from family to family in the form of dowry, bride price, and inheritance. And one of the things that the eighth has the quality of is that of the in-laws. So the eighth is less about your direct family, though it is certainly in there. But let's say, you know, 50-50 split. Your family's in there, and the in-laws' family are in there. And the in-laws, the presence of the in-laws, is what makes the eighth so interesting, because it is the house of the family of the marital partner or the long-term committed partner. And with Aquarius here in your chart, whether it's solar chart, whole sign chart, actual chart with Cancer rising, all amounts to the same thing, all, you know, subject to review and assessment of, well, does this make sense? With with Aquarius on the eighth place, that's the sign of groups on the eighth place. There's going to be a lot of people coming in who have access to you, who have access to your resources and access to whatever wealth you may have. And additionally, the sign Aquarius there gives you access to that in other people. And so what you get is a kind of a house that really is in many ways a very private house, right? It's private in the form of its pillow talk. It's what you talk about in the lawyer's office. It's what you might talk about in the safety deposit box room. It's what you might talk about with the loan officer in a bank. It's what you might talk about with your attorney. It's generally private on that level. So the eighth usually has a company confidential quality to it. Except when you put Aquarius there, this creates a quite an unusual situation that is pretty much one of the most wide open placements you can have in the eighth, except maybe for Leo folks who have Pisces on this house. And this calls for highly conscious regulation of your affairs and regulation of the ins and the outs, i.e. really good bookkeeping, really understanding what is going on with your finances, which is a thing that many people just don't quite have the energy to do. You know, there are people who will just keep hitting their ATM card till they run out of money and then figure out why they ran out of money. And I suggest that you not do that. I think of these matters as being equivalent to the altimeter, and whatever that thing is that tells you how parallel you are to the horizon in the cockpit of an airplane. There's a word for it. I don't know it. But you certainly wouldn't want to drive down a road in your car without access to your dashboard, your headlights, your windshield wipers, and to know where all those things are and to know that those things are working. And so that is how I conceive of the bookkeeping, accounting, and general administration functions of life. There are also plenty of relationships where not only does one partner or another have the money, one partner or another has knowledge of the money and controls the money, and this happens more than you would think, even in contemporary times. I mean, you know, in my family, my mom's father would give her an allowance every week, and she never once saw a paycheck stub or a bank statement. You would think, well, okay, that was the 1950s, the 1940s, those and earlier. Those days are gone, but not so much. And there are a lot of people who abdicate control of their money to someone else, and I would suggest that now is the time for you to get that control. I say that because we have Saturn in Aquarius now, and Saturn is always pointing to the most urgent necessity that you have and that you are facing, and it is time to do a complete reconciliation of all accounts. So this is why I titled that Cancer reading The Reconciliation of Accounts and of Humanity. So there's that financial angle of the 12th, and then there is that human interaction angle via the in-laws. A few other things going on with the 8th house. It tends to be the place where it is the house of shared values. So it's also a house that has very strong sexual implications. This is not that well documented in astrology. It is somewhat documented. There are very important houses that are associated with sexuality. I've done whole presentations on this, and some of them are quite interestingly lit up in your chart right now. I'm going to close with a brief comment on the 12th and the 5th, but the 8th is one of those houses, and it is it is such a powerful house that I've read for clients who have a whole bunch of planets packed in the 8th house, and they're the kinds of let's say, for example, the kinds of girls who grow up a little bit young, or even when they're preteen, are followed down the street by the guy in the car offering them a ride, and they have all kinds of offers and propositions that they do not comprehend. And so the 8th house is active very young, and it can function as a kind of a magnet. And if you have a lot of resources there, you're going to find people who are coming along and looking for those resources. And so it calls for exceptional boundaries. Now, to have Saturn there is emphasizing this whole concept of having these exceptional boundaries and working out those boundaries. But one of them begins with your own sense of understanding what it is that you need and that you are interested in, what your side of your desires and the necessity of your agreements is, irrespective of anyone else. It's your private, personal set of both resources and requirements, a little more powerful than desires. The eighth goes goes one bump up above desires. The fifth is more like the house of desires. The eighth starts to get us to the level of needs and relationship needs. And say, for example, the communication needs that come along with sexual needs. So an example of the eighth is you might have your particular style of specific sexual desire. I know, extremely taboo subject, that stuff, that thing, that experience that you want, a certain kind of person that you want, whatever. But then the eighth is also going to bring in a communication need. It's going to bring in the thing that facilitates that being a safe or at least somewhat dependable experience. And so it's not just about wanting to have the experience. There is a whole set of necessities that surround that associated with the eighth house. And the presence of Saturn, which is going to go on for a little bit less than two more years, in an extraordinarily powerful placement for Saturn. Again, not commented on enough by astrology. A lot of really good astrology was lost in the late 19th and early 20th centuries and continues to be lost in the 21st century. But one of them is the extraordinary power of Saturn in Aquarius. And this is saying, take charge of your affairs, with the puns of various kinds on the word affairs, right? Think about that. And then Jupiter there is saying, Jupiter's currently in Pisces. It's going to retreat back into Aquarius for a while, where it will be through the end of 2021. It'll get back into Pisces, I believe, in Aquarius in July, and then spend the last 6 months of 2021 in Aquarius. That is a very strong emphasis, and that is saying, you know, keep in mind what it is that you actually want and try to sort out desires from needs. It's easy to go down the role of understanding needs or defining needs, and it is more challenging, I think, certainly for my, let's say, ethically centered, more service-oriented, selfless types who were drawn to my work to focus on what it is that you actually want. Now, one thing I can tell you is that the eighth house tends to be the house that is associated with topics like jealousy. And in the eighth, with Aquarius there is going to be something inherently polyamorous. I don't mean that Cancerian people like to go to polyamory or tantric sex conferences. Certainly you might, and you might find it to be a very natural environment to be in a place where there is some collective concept, loose though it may be, collective concept of what sexuality is about. But there is a condition, an energy condition described in your chart where you are likely to want more than something other than the ordinary conventional one-on-one forever type of thing, whatever that might be. It can be having friends of the opposite sex. It can be, or whatever sexual orientation you are might conflict with the relationship that you're in. But how you handle and manage attractions, both of yourself and of your partner. With Aquarius, there's going to be the presence of other people in there, and you're going to have a natural affinity to communicate with them and to have experiences of some kind with them. And one of the nice things about Aquarius is that it doesn't necessarily have to get physical, say, for example, in the same way that Pisces or Taurus might, but there will be an intimacy that Aquarius can facilitate and a desire for familiarity. I would say that anybody who is Aquarius 8th, who is leaning toward polyamory, is more likely to be of the kind. There's many, many kinds of polyamory. That would be an awesome Tantra studio to do. But two of the kinds are panfidelity. That was what Simone de Beauvoir had. She had her husband, Jean-Paul Sartre, in France, and she had a lover in the United States, and these relationships went on, for her most of her adult life. And so that is a form of highly structured, organized polyamory that many people do this, and they're not called that. They're not writing blog posts and podcasts about it, but that's just how they live, and everybody is fine with it and understands that. The other quality of polyamory, the other quite, let's say, species of polyamory that exists with Aquarius could be the intimate network, which is a form of relating where it's not so much the like one-on-one running in parallel in perpetuity, but rather a social network of friends and lovers that itself creates a kind of a constellation. I think Marge Piercy has a poem called "A New Constellation" that describes this, and you might want to check on it. And I think also a book that I would love to reread that speaks to the kinds of both social conditions and relationships that I'm describing is called Woman on the Edge of Time, again by Marge Piercy, one of the absolutely brilliant science fiction writers of our time, still living. And what an unbelievably eloquent writer. And one of the things about Woman on the Edge of Time is that it challenges the issues of sanity and insanity. What's that about? It is brilliant on the issue of gender. She reworks the entire English language to remove all of the gender bias, making about five or six little edits. She's just fucking genius. And so, for example, replaces the words his and her with per, right? Per cup. Her house. You don't need his or her. And then looks at what happens to society when things move very, very, very rapidly in a technological direction, and what the impact of that is. Again, Woman on the Edge of Time, recommended to me by a grad student at SUNY Buffalo named Peter Hirsch, who I'd love to track down, but he's got a very common name. So anyway, keep an eye on your money, your desires, your relationships, the interchanges that you have with other people. And monitor that closely, because by the time Pluto gets into the eighth house, you are going to want to have that house in order once Pluto is there. And then suddenly, instead of dealing with a kind of an organized, manageable, structured concept like Saturn, you're dealing with something like raw power. And this is going to emerge a lot more quickly than we think. 2 years right now goes by very, very quickly, and we're looking at somewhat less than that. We're looking at something around, from the time of this reading, about 21 months until Pluto arrives in Aquarius to stay for more than two decades. Okay, as promised, today is want to make a couple of comments about the 12th and the 5th. Again, understanding that this is sensitive territory, and it's the kind of thing that keeps people coming back to my readings for years, and then some hear me talk about this kind of thing, and they flee very quickly to the nearest blog that's not me. So here's what's up. I said there are many houses that have that through which we express our feelings and our needs and desires around erotic life. And the human creature is very complicated and is also existing on many different levels of reality. Now, living creatures all do. Your plants all come with divas. Your cats and dogs all come with the kind of archetypal, representatives. They're kind of divine hypostasis of the archetypal dog and all that. So everybody's working on a lot of different levels at once. And, but humans, extraordinarily complex situation that we are in. And we possess this thing that some psychiatrists of the past and psychological theorists have mapped out as the so-called unconscious. What is going on below the immediate level of liminality? And then what is this kind of vapor trail that we carry through our ancestors that enters in a few different places? We talked somewhat about the seventh house kind of replay factor. And in the 12th house, which is kind of a, a Rorschach mirror copy of the seventh, if you fold the chart in half, the seventh house and the 12th house are overlaid on one another. And they have that mirrored house quality to them. Only the seventh is what's right in your face, and the 12th is what slips in through dreams and what you might experience in some kind of a multi-dimensional experience. So, it's your birthday, so you take mushrooms, and then you're having all these thoughts and feelings and concepts, and you're peering in between the layers and, addressing things that you know that you need to resolve, and suddenly you find yourself doing very deep work. That's the stuff of very often the stuff of the 12th house. And right now, as we speak, Mercury is stationing direct in the 12th house, your 12th house, whatever orientation you have on the sign Cancer, the sign before is the 12th. And so that the sign before quality works as the 12th all the way throughout the wheel. Wherever you are dealing with a sign before the sign where the action is happening, that's a 12th house effect. And with Cancer as your primary orientation, the 12th is high. When the 12th gets going, like it is right now with Mercury stationing direct, it is can be very, very powerful. And what the 12th does is it taps you into a deep underground or undersea, perhaps, region of feelings, experiences, needs, and desires. And so in these rare days that Mercury is going to be slow and powerful, and this is going to take quite a while to resolve, I think that Mercury finally re-enters the sign, re-enters your sign, our sign, events position, Mercury, hold on please while I calculate this using computers. Zero Cancer. Mercury will, on July 11th, so the whole Mercury retrograde thing is going to be working out now for approximately another 3 weeks as Mercury makes its way all the way through Gemini, hence all the way through your 12th house, completing a third square to Neptune and all that. This is giving you access to things that you are feeling and experiencing that might be just below the level of liminality. Like imagine a cork floating on the water. And as the waves happen, the cork might bob below for a second, it might push up, it might bob below. That level where cork meets surface of water is what I would consider the line of liminality in thought. The thought is the cork, and the consciousness is the water, and it has its waves, which water usually does, and then the cork is bobbing up and down. And maybe the cork has a little weight on it so that it can sink a little bit below the surface, and then the current's right, it can pop back up, right? Maybe it's a very dense cork, something like this. So we do tend to have a dense cork. And the thing is, the gift here is that you are going to be, and probably have been, if you're tuning into it, treated to a tour of your experiences, a tour of your needs, desires, unresolved matter, unfulfilled, things unfulfilled. And there's two vitally necessary things to read in this situation. One of them is that the 12th Gemini style has two sides of the story. And so what can happen when Gemini is activated, particularly by Mr. Gemini itself, Mercury, is that you may be seeing a whole other side of something and experiencing it as if it's suddenly real and came out of nowhere, that just kind of bursts forth out of latency and then emerges into, suddenly it's like right there where you can look and see and feel it. And like, where was that? What's that about? Is that me? Well, it's a facet of you. So please be open-minded about what you think, and you do not need to neither resist nor let yourself be consumed by this identification thing that we do in our society. Oh my God, am I? Not fill in the blanks. The other thing going on is that incredibly, Mercury is stationing direct in a conjunction to a point called Algira. I've written about Algira. Currently, it's on the front page of Planet Waves. It'll be on the subscriber feeds, a number of other places. And the article is called... It's been a couple of days. Notes from the Dreamtime. The land calls the people, and the people coexist with the land. So the point Algira is named for what the early anthropologists, the name that they gave to the concept, the Aboriginal Australian concept of the Dreamtime. And so there is a portal open to the Dreamtime. And this may be thundering through for some people. For others, it may not be so much. You may or may not be able to remember. You may be getting the Gemini effect. You may be getting the liminal, subliminal effect. However, pay attention and follow your dreams. And you can use this portal actively. You can actively tap in and... seek information and get information. One thing I point out in my article that may or may not apply to you directly is that the point Algira is about the Dreamtime, but for Indigenous Australians, the Dreamtime involves the access to that dimension, which is a parallel dimension, which we're sitting in right now, as well as the land itself and the ancestors, all of them woven together by one idea. And so there is the idea here that all who shape the world that you live in still inhabit the world that you live in, whether this is a literal inhabiting, as it might be, i.e. their spirits or their ghosts or whatever, or a vast collection of samskaras, latent past impressions, that you carry around, whether it's the spirit of antiques and the spoon that your grandmother gave you, whatever it might be. Remember that those who have passed through the territory are still among us, and you can expand that, those who have passed through the territory, to a whole diversity of concepts, including all the people who have passed through your reality. And so now is the time to be open to them, and make friends with them, a little bit in the style of the Days of the Dead, where they, you know, they light the way with those little paper lanterns that guide the spirits back home. Now is a fantastic opportunity to make peace with anyone you may need to make peace with, and by that I mean, well, those not necessarily in their body or in your physical presence, perhaps not available, and then that's one whole side of this Algira Mercury station conjunction. So that's available, but I have found that with the 12th, the ability to get into those difficult to access places is enhanced by utilities, the power, I'm not quite sure the word, offered by the activity in the 12th house. The 12th is a very difficult to access house because it's so elusive. It requires often some altered state of consciousness. It's very rarely in a normal state of consciousness. Those who do experience the 12th in a normal state of consciousness are kind of world walkers who walk with one foot in each dimension all through the day. And having Gemini in this house, you are a likely candidate being able to do that. Okay, so those are my thoughts right now. Much more in Aquarian era. That piece took me months to write, and I think is one of my best pieces of astrology writing in years, and being offered at a very low fee. And if you just can't afford it, just call me. Just email me, and I will send it to you. Just to make sure that this is not like strictly an ad. I just want you to have that if you want it. And anybody who got an Aquarian era or respect, any sign can have that. So it is a kind of a map to the future and a map beyond this problem that is going to be the problem of the 21st century, which is transhumanism, which is this glamour allure con job to give up our humanity. And that's a ridiculous notion because, as far as I'm concerned, our humanity is the only thing that we have. Think about your dog or your cat friends. You wouldn't want your cat to be any less of a cat. No robot cat can satisfy you if you like to have that sound of bona fide authentic purring in your ear or your lap, and there's something you appreciate about throwing a ball, and your canine friend drops it in your hand, completely coated with spit, and you happily throw it again. That's the thing. Whatever that is that makes your cat and dog a cat and dog, there is this thing that makes us human. And that's the thing we want. That's the thing we need. That's the thing we ultimately love about being here and the reason that we came here. On that note, I leave you for the moment. If you'd like to reach me, if you have any questions or thoughts, you may reach me privately at efc@planetwaves.net. No one else will see that but me, and I wish you a very happy solar return season, or the sun going over your ascendant or your moon. Thank you for your business and your trust, and bye for now.